Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcasts, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, NHK World Radio Japan, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. President Trump reinstated his belief that Greenland will be annexed by the U.S. There's a Greenland election for independence from Denmark next week, and Greenlanders do not want to be connected to the U.S. At an Egyptian summit, Arab leaders endorsed a post-war redevelopment plan for Gaza. Israel has been blocking all aid from reaching Gaza since Sunday, leading to a return to starvation and more death. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
U.S. President Donald Trump has added fuel to the fire over his ambitions for Greenland. The president told Congress he believes the Arctic island will end up in American hands one way or the other. For many Greenlanders, the main issue ahead of elections next week isn't joining the U.S., though, but full independence from Denmark.
America is Donald Trump reiterated his desire to annex Greenland to the U.S. in typically contradictory style.
We strongly support your right to determine your own future. And if you choose, we welcome you into the United States of America. But we need it really for international world security. And I think we're going to get it. One way or the other, we're going to get it.
The reason for the sudden interest in an enormous Arctic island with just 57,000 inhabitants? Well, there's its coveted strategic location. While under the ice lie valuable rare earth metals, vital for telecommunications, as well as billions of barrels of untapped oil. Denmark colonized the island 300 years ago and still controls its foreign and defense policies, though Greenland has been semi-autonomous since 1979. Now elections next week will see the question of full Greenlandic independence brought into sharp focus.
Oh, the elections on March 11th, they're going to be historical. It's very likely that there will be a process talking about independence, real independence, for the first time between Denmark and Greenland.
Denmark's foreign minister said the most important part of Trump's speech was to respect the islanders' sovereignty.
They want to loosen their ties to Denmark, but I have no idea that they want to do that in order to become, you know, an integrated part of America. So emphasizing what he did, their right to self-determination, I think, was the most important part of the speech.
Residents of the capital, Nuuk, gave a mixed reaction.
One way or the other, we're going to
keep on dreaming.
Donald Trump, she got the military, she got the food, she got everything. I think she's thinking about it, Greenlandic. We need help. No more Danish, no more everything. We need help.
And he might add a lot of taxes here, which would also increase the homelessness here. So it's really, we feel like it's a bad idea, and we just more want to be like our little island, just more independent than anything else.
Meanwhile, as Greenland prepares to vote, the message from its incumbent prime minister is clear. We don't want to be Americans nor Danes, Mutti B. Ege wrote on Facebook. Greenland is ours.
Now, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi says Arab leaders have endorsed Egypt's post-war plan for the Gaza Strip. Speaking at a summit of Arab nations in Cairo, al-Sisi said the reconstruction plan would allow Gaza's roughly 2 million Palestinians to remain in the territory.
Arab leaders agreeing on a new plan for Gaza, one that includes Gazans.
I invite you now to adopt the reconstruction and development plan of Gaza, as well as the draft of the closing statement.
The Cairo plan counters Trump's Middle East Riviera proposal, which called for Gazans to leave the territory and was condemned by the UN as tantamount to ethnic cleansing. UN Chief Antonio Guterres attended the summit and endorsed the reconstruction plan for Gaza, which ensures its population remains.
I welcome and strongly endorse the Arab-led initiative to mobilize support for Gaza's reconstruction clearly expressed in this summit. And the UN stands ready to fully cooperate in this endeavor. We recognize that reconstruction requires governance and security arrangements that can help guarantee a brighter, more stable future for Palestinians and Israelis alike.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas welcomed the Egyptian plan and urged Trump to support one that doesn't displace Palestinians. Other Arab leaders present at the summit also strongly opposed Trump's plan. And as they aligned on Gaza's reconstruction, they also called for other nations outside of the region to lend their support.
In Gaza, people are already feeling the consequences of Israel's blocking of aid, which comes during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan.
People here in the northern Gazan city of Jabalia have gathered to collect aid. The food supplies are a lifeline for many. But soon these supplies will be blocked. This fear has gripped the people here.
Suffering will increase after the occupation's decision to close the crossings. Since the beginning of the war, they've been trying to starve us, and we fear the people will starve due to lack of aid and food supplies. People are also afraid of the return of war and to face death again. Isn't it enough that the occupation has killed 50 or 60,000 martyrs so far?
It's the Islamic month of Ramadan, associated with fasting. And soon after the announcement of halting of all aid, people rush to stock up food.
Prices have started to rise in the market now, and people in this blessed month need these food items to meet the needs of their families. The fears are very great, whether in securing people's daily needs or through the return of war. People here who live in destroyed homes do not need this war.
The war has left most of Gaza's surviving population of 2.2 million dependent on international aid. About 608 trucks have been entering Gaza daily since the ceasefire began on January 19, easing fears of famine raised by international experts. But these fears are becoming real again.
We were truly surprised by the Israeli escalation in closing the crossing. We were looking to the UN and international care and America's sponsorship of the ceasefire agreement, hoping it would reach a permanent ceasefire. But we're surprised that this holy month, despite the ongoing siege for 2 years, the situation has returned to last year's Ramadan when we were under a complete siege.
Anger and despair is engulfing Gaza. People who have already endured displacement, destruction, and the loss of loved ones now fear further devastation.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. Deutsche Welle is also up at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. On to France 24. First, a press review on the Trump administration bypassing Congress to send $4 billion in weapons to Israel, including 35,000 2,000-pound bombs. Israel is gearing up for a return to war in Syria. then some American press on Trump's speech to Congress, then press reviews on the UK summit on Ukraine. France 24.
Moving to the Middle East, Leo, you've picked up on a number of articles about Israel getting huge amounts of financial backing from the United States.
This is reported by the New York Times that Marco Rubio bypassed Congress in order to send $4 billion worth of weapons to Israel, the Secretary of State invoking emergency authorities in order to bypass the normal procedures. It's the second time in a month that the Trump administration has skirted the process of congressional approval for sending arms to the country. The deal includes more than 35,000 2,000-pound bombs. When asked about the decision, Rubio just said that the administration would continue to use all the available tools to fulfill America's long-standing commitment to Israel's security. And according to Lebanese paper L'Orient Le Jour this morning, Israel may be gearing up for war in Syria. The headline today reads, Israel beats the drums of war. They go into more detail inside the paper, asking the question, does Israel intend to go to war with Syria? Israeli forces are now threatening to intervene directly in the town of Jarama on the outskirts of Damascus. The Middle East Eye, which is a Qatari-backed publication based in London, have a similar story, reporting that the IDF have been ordered to prepare to defend the city. This piece explains that Jarama is a majority Druze city, which Israel says is currently under attack by Syrian regime forces. They have a quote from Defense Minister Israel Katz. We will not allow Syria's extremist Islamist terror regime to harm the Druze. If the regime harms the Druze, it will be harmed by us.
Let's turn your attention now to the international newspapers to see how they are reporting on that speech from Donald Trump. Leo McGuinn is with us for that. Leo, what are the first articles saying about how it went down?
Well, the Washington Post call it a classic Trump speech, rich in showmanship and at odds with reality. America's momentum is back, Trump proclaimed. A big claim, this piece says, considering Trump is less than halfway through his first 100 days and what he's achieved so far is mostly turmoil and a blizzard of legal challenges. The Post also explain why a number of Democratic women wore pink in protest. Democrat Teresa Fernandez said that they wanted to wear the colour in order to raise the alarm about the negative impacts Trump's policies are having on women. And this New York Times opinion piece argues that it's hard not to protest a speech like that. The speech, they say, was overflowing with distortions, misinformations and outright lies from the president. And while the Republicans will claim that the Democratic protests were disrespectful, this piece says it's hard to blame those who couldn't stop themselves from shouting at the barrage of misinformation, particularly for those who remember what happened in that very same room back in 2021 when they were forced to cower from president supporters during the Capitol riots. The Wall Street Journal have a list of takeaways from the speech, including the fact that Trump continued to heap blame on Joe Biden, who he called the worst president in the US history.
One of our top stories here, Europe's summit on Ukraine that took place in the United Kingdom. How has it been covered? How is are the newspapers reporting it?
Well, it's on the front pages of just about every major European publication this morning, as you'd expect, whether it be in Germany with Tagesspiegel calling it the hour of Europe, telling us that it's Europe's responsibility after the USA has abandoned Ukraine. Here in France, Libération have the same photo on their front page of European leaders linking arms in unity with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. In the so-called coalition of the willing, their headline, The Response, as European leaders begin a historic shift towards a Europe of defence. In an interview with Le Figaro, French President Emmanuel Macron calls on EU members to invest massively in European defence, which he wants to make the central issue of the extraordinary meeting on set for Thursday. The French president says he wants to give a mandate to the European Commission to use innovative financing in order to raise considerable amounts, initially 200 billion euros. In other words, Emmanuel Macron is asking Brussels for the money that France lacks. In the UK, many of the papers have the same photo on their front page, King Charles meeting with Zelensky after that summit. The Mirror call it a hand of friendship, the clearest possible signal that Britain is backing Zelensky after his fallout with President Trump. The Telegraph have this quote from Prime Minister Keir Starmer on their front page, who of course was chairing the summit in London. "We are at a crossroads in history," Starmer calling on Europe to step up. The paper says that Starmer's bridging approach is the right one at this stage, but the gulf between Zelensky and the US is currently oceans wide. Starmer announced a £1.6 billion missile deal for Ukraine yesterday, which will see thousands of air defense missiles sent to the country. The PM making it very clear that his support for Ukraine is unwavering.
Those press reviews were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, as well as most podcast sites. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. In Japan, the price of rice has doubled in the past year, leading to a government auction of stockpiles. European leaders are drafting a peace plan for Ukraine. NATO countries skipped an important United Nations conference on the treaty banning nuclear weapons. China is holding its annual People's Congress, and they are hoping for another 5% increase in gross domestic product despite the U.S. doubling its tariff. NHK Japan.
Japan's agriculture ministry says it will begin auctioning rice from the country's stockpiles on March 10th. The ministry announced last month it would release 210,000 tons of grain on the market to stabilize distribution. Despite that, prices of the staple food have continued to rise. Officials say 150,000 tons will be made available in the 3 days of bidding. It's the first of two planned auctions tapping the national reserves. Buyers need to meet certain conditions to take part in the bidding. Major wholesalers have announced their intention to participate. The auctioned rice is expected to start showing up on the store shelves nationwide from late this month. Consumers will be watching. The latest ministry data shows rice prices at supermarkets have soared 90% from a year ago.
European leaders say they're drafting a peace plan they hope Washington will get behind. They want to pitch a one-month ceasefire as a first step toward ending the fighting between Ukraine and Russia. French President Emmanuel Macron gave details during an interview with French daily Le Figaro. He says he and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer are considering proposing a truce in the air, on the seas, and on energy infrastructure. The next step would be halting ground fighting and then peace talks. Macron says peacekeepers would be deployed in Ukraine once a ceasefire is implemented. But he says Ukraine needs Washington to guarantee peace. Le Figaro also reports Macron spoke with his U.S. counterparts several times by phone in recent days. It comes after Zelensky received a much warmer welcome from key players in Europe after his rocky reception at the White House. Starmer says they agreed to strengthen military support for Ukraine and tighten economic pressure on Russia.
NATO countries have skipped a United Nations conference on the treaty banning nuclear weapons. The five-day meeting opened on Monday. Albania is the latest country to stop attending. The third meeting of states parties to the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons opened at the UN headquarters in New York. NATO member Albania was seen at the observer seats on the first day. But on Tuesday, its name was removed just before the start of the conference. Albania's mission to the UN told NHK that the country will not be attending the meeting. It said it was a misunderstanding in communication with the UN Secretariat. NATO countries Germany, Belgium, and Norway were also absent. They had attended the conference as observers twice in the past. One Norwegian civic group that monitors disarmament efforts was disappointed by the no-shows.
It is all the more regrettable that they now, because they now, you know, there are dramatic things happening in NATO.
The group also said these countries' non-attendance at an important forum about nuclear weapons is not in their interest, nor those of their citizens.
One of China's biggest political events, the National People's Congress, has kicked off in Beijing. The government announced it's aiming for around 5% GDP growth this year. Premier Li Qiang unveiled the target, which is the same as last year's. The country's GDP did manage to hit that 5% goal in 2024. The government intends to maintain growth despite recent trade friction with the United States.
The global environment today is increasingly complex and severe. That could have a major impact on China's trade, science, and technology. Unilateralism and protectionism are also on the rise, hindering the international economy.
Washington recently doubled its tariffs on Chinese goods, bringing it up to 20%. Beijing has announced countermeasures, but exports have long driven the Chinese economy. Among other actions, Beijing plans to promote consumption to bolster domestic demand. On defense spending, that budget will increase by 7.2%, bringing it to about $245 billion. It shows Beijing will continue to strengthen its military capabilities despite a potential economic slowdown. China has stepped up military pressure on Taiwan and is continuing its maritime activities in the East and South China Seas.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're now heard at 9 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may also be found at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, there is a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show on the airwaves. Please join in the fun. And if you're listening on a public radio station, they're soon going to have an even greater need for your support as well. We'll conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Arab leaders endorse the Egyptian plan for the reconstruction of Gaza, and this story has more details than the Deutsche Welle report I played earlier. In London, activists have criticized the BBC for removing the Palestinian documentary that was just awarded an Academy Award. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Arab leaders have endorsed an Egyptian plan for the reconstruction of war-shattered Gaza that would allow its residents to remain in the territory. Egypt's president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, has said at a meeting in Cairo on Tuesday. Region leaders endorsed the counterproposal to the U.S. President Donald Trump's plan to expel Gaza's 2,300,000 residents and redevelop the Palestinian territory without Palestinians. The attendees at the summit in Cairo included the Emir of Qatar, the Vice President of the United Arab Emirates, and the Foreign Minister of Saudi Arabia. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres also attended. Egypt's plan includes an initial recovery phase aimed at demining the territory, providing temporary housing, followed by longer reconstruction phases focused on rebuilding essential infrastructure, according to media reports. The other key questions about Gaza's future include who will govern the enclave and which countries will provide the billions of dollars that will be needed for the reconstruction of the devastated territory. El-Sisi said that Egypt had worked in cooperation with Palestinians on creating an administrative committee of independent, professional Palestinian technocrats entrusted with the government of Gaza. The committee would be responsible for the oversight of humanitarian aid and managing the Gaza Strip's affairs for a temporary period in preparation for the return of the Palestinian Authority. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who heads the Palestinian Authority, said he welcomed the Egyptian idea and urged President Trump to support such a plan that would not involve displacing Palestinian residents. Abbas in power since 2005, also said that he was ready to hold presidential and parliamentary elections if circumstances allowed, adding that his PA, the Palestine Authority, is the only legitimate government and military force in the occupied Palestinian territories. Any proposal would require heavy buy-in from oil-rich Gulf Arab states, such as the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, which have billions of dollars needed to roll out the Egyptian plan. Extraordinary summit in Cairo came days after the first phase of the Israeli-Hamas ceasefire in Gaza expired over the weekend. Israel reneged on the terms of the deal by refusing to embark on a second phase of negotiations, instead pushing for an extension of the first phase of the deal. Israel announced on Sunday that it would halt the entry of humanitarian aid and other supplies into Gaza, introducing a new ceasefire proposal that was backed by the United States, but rejected by Hamas. In London, pro-Palestinian activists have criticized the BBC for pulling a documentary about Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip from its streaming service, projecting the film on the British broadcaster's Scotland office. Holding Palestinian flags, the activists from the Gaza Genocide Emergency Committee gathered outside the BBC Scotland headquarters in Glasgow on Monday and chanted slogans such as "Boycott the BBC" and "Don't pay the license fee." They denounced the BBC's shameful decision to remove the documentary entitled "Gaza: How to Survive a War Zone" from iPlayer and screened it back on the corporation's building in Glasgow. The film, produced by independent company Hoyo Films, aired on the BBC 2 on February the 16th. 5 days later, however, it was taken down following complaints from those advocating Israel's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. The pro-Israeli activists piled pressure on the BBC after it was revealed that the film's 13-year-old English-speaking narrator, Abdullah, was the son of a deputy minister of agriculture in Gaza. At the beginning of the documentary, Abdullah asks visitors, "Have you ever wondered what you'd do if your world is destroyed? Most importantly, could you stay alive after all this? Do you say that we are alive?" In an open letter to the BBC, hundreds of TV, film professionals, as well as journalists, called the broadcaster's decision to remove the program politically motivated censorship. It also condemned the racist assumptions and weaponization of identity regarding the narrator's background.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version of their show Monday through Friday at noon Pacific time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.